好读你听的时间，今日继续读 Miguel de Cervantes 的 Don Quixote， 读到 Volume 2。咁上一回咧就结束咗 Part 1啦。作者就话因为揾唔到材料去继续 Don Quixote 嘅事迹，就将个故事告一段落。咁啊，用佢哋嘅墓志铭咧，算系一个收尾啦，又唔可以话草草嘅收尾，因为毕竟个故事都破咗。故事最尾就系 Don Quixote 膊头俾人打伤咗啦，佢自己都认为咧要翻乡下休养啦。咁啊 ，Sancho 咧都好开心。咁我哋睇下呢一节咧 ，Don Quixote 疗伤完毕之后咧，点样复出啊？不过喺复出之前咧，都要睇一睇呢个作者嘅前言啊，对于个 Part Two 嘅前言。看一下这个作者有什么说话跟读者说。
Dedication of Volume 2 to the Count of Lemos. These days passed, when sending your excellency my plays that had appeared in print before being shown on the stage, I said, if I remember well, that Don Quixote was putting on his spurs to go and render homage to your excellency.Now I say that, with his spurs, he is on his way. Should he reach destination, methinks I shall have rendered some service to your excellency, as from many parts I am urged to send him off, so as to dispel the loathing and disgust caused by another Don Quixote who, under the name of Second Part, has run masquerading through the whole world, and he who has shown the greatest longing for him has been the great Emperor of China,who wrote me a letter in Chinese a month ago and sent it by a special courier. He asked me, or to be truthful, he begged me to send him Don Quixote, for he intended to found a college where the Spanish tongue would be taught, and it was his wish that the book to be read should be the history of Don Quixote. He also added that I should go and be the rector of this college. I asked the bearer if his majesty had afforded a sum in aid of my travel expenses. He answered, no, not even in thought.Then, my brother, I replied, you can return to your China, post haste or at whatever haste you are bound to go, as I am not fit for so long a travel and, besides being ill, I'm very much without money, while emperor for emperor and monarch for monarch, I have at Naples the great Count of Lemos, who, without so many petty titles of colleges and rectorships, sustains me, protects me, and does me more favor than I can wish for. Thus, I gave him his leave, and I beg mine from you,offering your excellency the Trabajos de Pesales y Segismunda, a book I shall finish within 4 months, Dio Valente, and which will be either the worst or the best that has been composed in our language, I mean of those intended for entertainment, at which I repent of having called it the worst, for, in the opinion of friends, it is bound to attain the summit of possible quality. May your excellency return in such health that is wished you.Pesales will be ready to kiss your hand and I your feet, being as I am, your excellency's most humble servant. From Madrid, this last day of October of the year 1615, at the service of your excellency, Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra. The author's preface. God bless me, gentle reader. How eagerly must thou be looking forward to this preface?Expecting to find their retaliation, scolding and abuse against the author of the second Don Quixote, I mean him who was, they say, begotten at Tordesillas and born at Tarragona. Well then, the truth is, I am not going to give thee that satisfaction. For though injuries stir up anger in humbler breasts, in mine the rule must admit of an exception. Thou wouldst have me call him as fool and malapert, but I have no such intention. Let his offence be his punishment.With his bread, let him eat it, and there's an end of it. What I cannot help taking amiss is that he charges me with being old and one-handed, as if it had been in my power to keep time from passing over me, or as if the loss of my hand had been brought about in some tavern, and not on the grandest occasion the past or present has seen, or the future can hope to see. If my wounds have no beauty to the beholder's eye, they are at least honorable in the estimation of those who know where they were received.For the soldier shows to greater advantage dead in battle than alive in flight. And so strongly is this my feeling, that if now it were proposed to perform an impossibility for me, I would rather have had my share in that mighty action than be free from my wounds this minute without having been present at it. Those the soldier shows on his face and breast are stars that direct others to the heaven of honor and ambition of merited praise. And moreover, it is to be observed that it is not with gray hairs that one writes, but with the understanding, and that commonly improves with years. I take it amiss, too, that he calls me envious, and explains to me, as if I were ignorant, what envy is, for really and truly, of the two kinds there are, I only know that which is holy, noble, and high-minded. And if that be so, as it is, I am not likely to attack a priest, above all, if, in addition, he holds the rank of familiar of the holy office. And if he said what he did on account of him, on whose behalf it seems he spoke, he is entirely mistaken. For I worship the genius of that person, and admire his works and his unceasing and strenuous industry. After all, I am grateful to this gentleman, the author, for saying that my novels are more satirical than exemplary, but that they are good, for they could not be that unless there was a little of everything in them. I suspect thou wilt say that I am taking a very humble life, and keeping myself too much within the bounds of my moderation, from a feeling that additional suffering should not be inflicted upon a sufferer, and that what this gentleman has to endure must doubtless be very great, as he does not dare to come out into the open field in broad daylight, but hides his name and disguises his country as if he had been guilty of some less majesty. If perchance thou shouldst come to know him, tell him from me that I do not hold myself aggrieved, for I know well what the temptations of the devil are, and that one of the greatest is putting it into a man's head that he can write and print a book by which he will get as much fame as money, and as much money as fame. And to prove it, I will beg of you, in your own sprightly, pleasant way, to tell him this story. There was a madman in Seville who took to one of the drollest absurdities and vagaries that every madman in the world gave way to. It was this. He made a tube of reed sharp at one end, and catching a dog in the street, or wherever it might be, he with his foot held one of its legs fast, and with his hand lifted up the other, and as best he could fix the tube where, by blowing, he made the dog as round as a ball. Then holding it in his position, he gave it a couple of slaps on the belly and let it go, saying the bystanders, "Do your worships think now that it is an easy thing to blow up a dog? Does your worship think now that it is an easy thing to write a book?" And if this story does not suit him, you may, dear reader, tell him this one, which is likewise of a madman and a dog. In Cordova, there was another madman, whose way it was to carry a piece of marble slab or a stone, not of the lightest, on his head, and when he came upon any unwary dog, he used to draw close to him and let the weight fall right on top of him, on which the dog, in a rage, barking and howling, would run three streets without stopping. If so happened, however, that one of the dogs he discharged his load upon was a cap-maker's dog, of which his master was very fond. The stone came down hitting it on the head, the dog raised a yell at the blow, the master saw the affair and was wroth, and snatching up a measure yard rushed out at the madman and did not leave a sound bone in his body, and at every stroke he gave him he said, "You dog, you thief, my lurcher, don't you see, you brute, that my dog is a lurcher?" And so, repeating the word lurcher and again, he sent the madman away beaten to a jelly. The madman took the lesson to heart, and vanished, and for more than a month never once showed himself in public. But after that he came out again, with his old trick and a heavier load than ever. He came up to where there was a dog, and examining it very carefully without venturing to let the stone fall, he said, "This is a lurcher, where?" In short, all the dogs he came across, be they mastiffs or terriers, he said were lurchers, and he discharged no more stones. Maybe it will be the same with this historian, that he will not venture another time to discharge the weight of his wit in books, which, being bad, are harder than stones. Tell him, too, that I do not care a farthing for the threat he holds out to me of depriving me of my profit by means of his book. For, to borrow from the famous interlude of the Peredenga, I say in answer to him, long life to my lord the Fain de Quattro, and Christ be with us all. Long life to the great Conde de Lemos, whose Christian charity and well-known generosity support me against all the strokes of my cursed fortune, and long life to the supreme benevolence of His Eminence of Toledo, Don Bernardo de Sandoval y Rojas. And what matter if there are no printing presses in the world, or if they print more books against me than there are letters in the verses of Mingo Revolgo? These two princes, unsought by any adulation or flattery of mine, of their own goodness alone, had taken it upon them to show me kindness and protect me, and in this I consider myself happier and richer than if fortune had raised me to her greatest height in the ordinary way. The poor man may retain honor, but not the fishes. Poverty may cast a cloud over nobility, but cannot hide it altogether. And as virtue of itself sheds a certain light, even though it be through the straits and chinks of penury, it wins the esteem of lofty and noble spirits, and in consequence their protection. Thou needst say no more to him, nor would I say anything more to thee, save to tell thee to bear in mind that this second part of Don Quixote which I offer thee is cut by the same craftsman and from the same cloth as the first, and that in it I present thee Don Quixote continued, and at length dead and buried, so that no one may dare to bring forward any further evidence against him, for that already produced is sufficient, and suffice it too, that some reputable person should have given an account of all these shrewd lunacies of his without going into the matter again, for abundance, even of good things, prevents them from being valued, and scarcity, even in the case of what is bad, confers a certain value. I was forgetting to tell thee that thou mayest expect the Perseus, which I am now finishing, and also the second part of Galatea.
好，这个前言呢就读到这里先，作者呢就用好简洁嘅字呢交代咗几件事。第一呢就系有一个冒充者，就冒充当其我哋呢个作品啦，就推出咗第二部。 咁咧就諗住趕喺呢個 Miguel de Cervantes 之前咧推出嘅，咁但係 Miguel de Cervantes 知道到呢件事咧，就立即咧就趕忙完成咗佢嘅 Part Two， 咁亦都推出咗。咁佢為此咧就借住呢個文章咧就話，相信大家都會以為我會大鬧特鬧噶啦，對於呢個冒充者，但係我唔會嘅。雖然佢話係咁講。 企咗道德高地，咁但系咧佢都借用咗两个故事咧去影射呢个冒充者啦，即系话佢嘅疯狂啊，佢嘅任性啊，佢哋嘅不可思议啊，借用咗两个 madman 有两个疯狂嘅人，佢哋嘅行为咁去影射啊，都唔系影射，就都几明显噶啦。咁到最尾咧，佢亦都多谢支持佢嘅人啦，吓两位王子啊，广大读者啦咁样。 咁佢最后呢就话，佢呢个章节呢就係会结束呢个故事㗎啦，讲到明呢係会寫死当其我提呢个角色，而寫死佢嘅用意呢就係为咗以后唔会再有人去寫第三 part、 第四part、第五part啦，啲同样事情呢唔会再发生。好，我哋睇下呢字有啲咩字同大家分享先 ，rectorship 嗰啲比较少用啊。 Rector 系咩呢 ？Rector rector 咧，即系一啲教区长啊，一啲教区嘅教长啊，或者啲学校嘅校长。咁 rectorship 呢个嘅意思就系 the office or rank of a rector， 即系 rectorate 系啦，一个名词嚟嘅。Vagaries vagaries v a g a r i e s 名词嚟嘅。An unexpected and inexplicable change in a situation or in someone's behaviour。 中文我会勉强翻译做变幻啦，变幻无常啊，啲成日都改变嘅嘢。Lurcher, lurcher, L-U-R-C-H-E-R, 都系名词 ，a crossbred dog, typically a retriever collie or sheepdog crossed with a greyhound, or a kind originally used for hunting and by poachers for catching rabbits.
一种狗啦，就系混种嘅，用嚟。
追捕呢啲兔仔，我哋可以简称做猎犬。好，今日读到呢度，下一节再同大家读你听，拜拜。大家好，读你听嘅时间，今日继续读 Miguel de Cervantes 嘅 Don Quixote， 读到 Part Two 第二部嘅第一节。咁呢一节个名叫做 Of the interview the curate and a barber had with Don Quixote about his malady， 承接翻上一。 part 嘅最后，Don Quixote 咧系要被送往去疗养嘅，唔系净系疗伤，系疗养。疗养嘅咩呢？就系要改正佢呢个骑士精神，佢呢个柔合嘅意识。咁Don Quixote 本人当然系唔知情啦。咁但系咧呢个 curate 同埋阿 Barbara 咧就系确信咧Don Quixote 咧个精神咧系有啲问题嘅。
上一回就交代了作者对于他的冒充 Don Quixote 的这个虚假的作者所写出来的东西啦，亦都交代了他对这件事的不耻啦，他的宽宏大度啦，同埋就是他对于原创这件事的一些想法。咁我再一次必须要表扬呢位作者，喺一个咁远久嘅年代，对于好多事情都好开通。当然佢可以再进一步做一啲喺文字上攻击佢，但系实际上其实佢又做唔到啲乜嘅。即系当年系对于创作呢样嘢系冇法例，冇执法，其实佢只能够嬲嘅啫。咁但系嬲有咩用呢 ？Anyway， 咁我哋睇下故事，睇我哋嘅主角 Don Quixote。去療養的時候的一些事情。
Theta Mate Benengeli. In the second part of this history, and third sally of Don Quixote says that the curate and the barber remained nearly a month without seeing him, lest they should recall or bring back to his recollection what had taken place. They did not, however, omit to visit his niece and housekeeper, and charged him to be careful to treat him with attention.And give him comforting things to eat, and such as were good for the heart and the brain, whence it was plain to see all his misfortune proceeded. The niece and housekeeper replied that they did so, and meant to do so with all possible care and assiduity, for they could perceive that their master was now and then beginning to show signs of being in his right mind. This gave great satisfaction to the curate and the barber, for they concluded they had taken the right course in carrying him off enchanted on the ox cart.As has been described in the first part of its great as well as accurate history, in the last chapter thereof. So they resolved to pay him a visit and test the improvement in his condition, although they thought it almost impossible that there could be any, and they agreed not to touch upon any point connected with knight-errantry so as not to run the risk of reopening wounds which were still so tender. They came to see him consequently,and found him sitting up in bed in a green baize waistcoat and a red Toledo cap, and so withered and dried up that he looked as if he had been turned into a mummy. They were very cordially received by him. They asked him after his health, and he talked to them about himself very naturally and in very well-chosen language. In the course of their conversation, they fell to discussing what they call statecraft and systems of government, correcting this abuse and condemning that, reforming one practice and abolishing another,each of the three setting up for a new legislator, a modern Lycurgus, or a brand new salon, and so completely did they remodel the state that they seemed to have thrust it into a furnace and taken out something quite different from what they had put in. And on all the subject they dealt with, Don Quixote spoke with such good sense that the pair of examiners were fully convinced that he was quite recovered and in his full senses.The niece and housekeeper were present at the conversation and could not find words enough to express their thanks to God at seeing their master so clear in his mind. The curate, however, changing his original plan, which was to avoid touching upon matters of chivalry, resolved to test Don Quixote's recovery thoroughly and see whether it were genuine or not. And so, from one subject to another, he came at last to talk of the news that had come from the capital, and, among other things, he said it was considered certain that the Turk was coming down with a powerful fleet, and that no one knew what his purpose was, or when the great storm would burst, and that all Christendom was in apprehension of this, which almost every year calls us to arms, and that his majesty had made provision for the security of the coasts of Naples and Sicily and the island of Malta. To this, Don Quixote replied,His Majesty has acted like a prudent warrior in providing for the safety of his realms in time, so that the enemy may not find him unprepared. But if my advice were taken, I would recommend him to adopt a measure which at present, no doubt, his Majesty is very far from thinking of. The moment the curate heard this, he said to himself, God keep thee in his hand, poor Don Quixote, for it seemed to me thou art precipitating thyself from the height of thy madness into the profound abyss of thy simplicity.But the barber, who had the same suspicion as the curate, asked Don Quixote what would be his advice as to the measures that he said ought to be adopted, for perhaps it might prove to be one that would have to be added to the list of the many impertinent suggestions that people were in the habit of offering to princes. Mine, Master Shaver, said Don Quixote, will not be impertinent, but on the contrary, pertinent. I don't mean that, said the barber. that experience has shown that all or most of the expedients which are proposed to His Majesty are either impossible or absurd or injurious to the king and to the kingdom. Mine, however, replied Don Quixote, is neither impossible nor absurd, but the easiest, the most reasonable, the readiest, and the most expeditious that could suggest itself to any projector's mind. You take a long time to tell it, Señor Don Quixote, said the curate. I don't choose to tell it here now, said Don Quixote, and have it reach the ears of the lords of the council tomorrow morning, and some other carry off the thanks and rewards of my trouble. For my part, said the barber, I give my word here and before God that I will not repeat what your worship says to king, rook, or earthly man. An oath I learnt from the ballad of the curate, who, in the prelude, told the king of the thief who had robbed him of the 100 gold crowns and his pacing mule. I'm not first in stories, said Don Quixote, but I know the oath is a good one, because I know the barber to be an honest fellow. Even if he were not, said the curate, I will go bail and answer for him that in this matter he will be as silent as a dummy, under pain of paying any penalty that may be pronounced. And who will be security for you, Señor Curate? Said Don Quixote. My profession, replied the curate, which is to keep secrets. Odds body, said Don Quixote at this. What more has His Majesty to do but to command, by public proclamation, all the knights errant that are scattered over Spain to assemble on a fixed day in the capital? For even if no more than half a dozen come, there may be one among them who alone will suffice to destroy the entire might of the Turk. Give me your attention and follow me. Is it, pray, any new thing for a single knight errant to demolish an army of 200,000 men, as if they all had but one throat or were made of sugar paste? Nay, tell me, how many histories are there filled with these marvels? If any, the famous Don Belianis were alive now, or any one of the innumerable progeny of Amadis of Gaul. If any of these were alive today, and were to come face to face with the Turk, by my faith, I would not give much for the Turk's chance, but God will have regard for His people, and will provide someone who, if not so valiant as the knights errant of yore, at least will not be inferior to them in spirit. But God knows what I mean, and I say no more. Alas, exclaimed the niece at this, may I die if my master does not want to turn knight errant again. To which Don Quixote replied, a knight errant I shall die, and let the Turk come down or go up when he likes, and in as strong force as he can. Once more I say, God knows what I mean. But here the barber said, I ask your worships to give me leave to tell a short story of something that happened in Seville, which comes so pat to the purpose just now that I should like greatly to tell it. Don Quixote gave him leave, and the rest prepared to listen, and he began thus. In a madhouse at Seville, there was a man whom his relations had placed there as being out of his mind. He was a graduate of Osuna in canon law, but even if he had been of Salamanca, it was the opinion of most people that he would have been mad all the same. This graduate, after some years of confinement, took it into his head that he was sane and in his full senses, and under this impression wrote to the archbishop, entreating him earnestly, and in very correct language, to have him released from the misery in which he was living. For by God's mercy he had now recovered his lost reason, though his relations, in order to enjoy his property, kept him there, and in spite of the truth, would make him out to be mad until his dying day. The archbishop, moved by repeated sensible, well-written letters, directed one of his chaplains to make inquiry of the madhouse as to the truth of the licentiate's statements, and to have an interview with the madman himself, and, if it should appear that he was in his senses, to take him out and restore him to liberty. The chaplain did so, and the governor assured him that the man was still mad, and that though he often spoke like a highly intelligent person, he would in the end break out into nonsense that in quantity and quality counterbalanced all the sensible things he had said before, as might be easily tested by talking to him. The chaplain resolved to try the experiment, and obtaining access to the madman, conversed with him for an hour or more, during the whole of which time he never uttered a word that was incoherent or absurd, but, on the contrary, spoke so rationally that the chaplain was compelled to believe him to be sane. Among other things, he said the governor was against him, not to lose the presents his relations made him for reporting him still mad but with lucid intervals, and that the worst foe he had in his misfortune was his large property, for in order to enjoy it, his enemies disparaged and threw doubts upon the mercy our Lord had shown him in turning him from the brute beast into a man. In short, he spoke in such a way that he cast suspicion on the governor, and made his relations appear covetous and heartless, and himself so rational that the chaplain determined to take him away with him that the archbishop might see him and ascertain for himself the truth of the matter. Yielding to this conviction, the worthy chaplain begged the governor to have the clothes in which the licentiate had entered the house given to him. The governor again bade him beware of what he was doing, as the licentiate was beyond a doubt still mad. But all his cautions and warnings were unavailing to dissuade the chaplain from taking him away. The governor, seeing that it was the order of the archbishop, obeyed, and they dressed the licentiate in his own clothes, which were new and decent. He, as soon as he saw himself clothed like one in his senses and divested of the appearance of a madman, entreated the chaplain to permit him in charity to go and take leave of his comrades, the madman. The chaplain said he would go with him to see what madmen there were in the house. So they went upstairs, and with them some of those who were present. Approaching a cage in which there was a furious madman, though just at the moment calm and quiet, the licentiate said to him, "Brother, think if you have any commands for me, for I am going home, as God has been pleased, in his infinite goodness and mercy, without any merit of mine, to restore me my reason. I am now cured and in my senses, for with God's power nothing is impossible. Have strong hope and trust in him, for as he has restored me to my original condition, so likewise he will restore you if you trust in him. I will take care to send you some good things to eat, and be sure you eat them, for I would have you know, I am convinced, as one who has gone through it, that all this madness of ours comes of having the stomach empty and the brains full of wind. Take courage, for despondency in misfortune breaks down health and brings on death." To all these words of the licentiate, another madman in the cage opposite that of the furious one was listening, and raising himself up from an old mat on which he lay stark naked, he asked in a loud voice who it was that was going away cured and in his senses. The licentiate answered, "It is I, brother, who am going. I have now no need to remain here any longer, for which I return infinite thanks to heaven that has had so great mercy upon me." "Mind what you are saying, licentiate. Don't let the devil deceive you," replied the madman. "Keep quiet, stay where you are, and you will save yourself the trouble of coming back." "I know I'm cured," returned the licentiate, "and that I shall not have to go stations again." "You cured," said the madman. "Well, we shall see. God be with you. But I swear to you by Jupiter, whose majesty I represent on earth, that for this crime alone, which Seville is committing today in releasing you from this house and treating you as if you were in your senses, I shall have to inflict such a punishment on it as will be remembered for ages and ages. Amen. Dost thou not know, thou miserable little licentiate, that I can do it, being, as I say, Jupiter the Thunderer, who hold in my hands the fiery bolts with which I am able and am wont to threaten and lay waste the world? But in one way only will I punish this ignorant town, and that is by not raining upon it, nor on any part of its district or territory, for 3 whole years, to be reckoned from the day and moment when this threat is pronounced. Thou free, thou cured, thou in thy senses, and I mad, I disordered, I bound. I will as soon think of sending rain as of hanging myself." Those present stood listening to the words and exclamations of the madman. But our licentiate, turning to the chaplain and seizing him by the hands, said to him, "Be not uneasy, Signor. Attach no importance to what this madman has said. For if he is Jupiter and will not send rain, I, who am Neptune, the father and god of the waters, will rain as often as it pleases me and may be needful." The governor and the bystanders laughed, and at their laughter the chaplain was half ashamed. And he replied, "For all that, Signor Neptune, it will not do to vex Signor Jupiter. Remain where you are, and some other day, when there is a better opportunity and more time, we will come back for you." So they stripped the licentiate, and he was left where he was. And that's the end of the story. "So that's the story, Master Barber," said Don Quixote, "which came in so pat to the purpose that you could not help telling it. Master Shaver, Master Shaver, how blind is he who cannot see through a sieve? Is it possible that you do not know that comparisons of wit with wit, valor with valor, beauty with beauty, birth with birth, are always odious and unwelcome? I, Master Barber, am not Neptune, the god of waters, nor do I try to make anyone take me for an astute man, for I am not one. My only endeavor is to convince the world of the mistake it makes in not retrieving itself the happy time when the order of knight-errantry was in the field. But our depraved age does not deserve to enjoy such a blessing as those ages enjoyed with knights errant took upon their shoulders the defense of kingdoms and protection of damsels,
the succor
of orphans and minors, the chastisement of the proud, and the recompense of the humble. With the knights of these days, for the most part, it is a damask, brocade, and rich stuffs they wear, the rustle as they go, not the chain mail of their armor. No knight nowadays sleeps in an open field exposed to the inclemency of heaven, and in full panoply from head to foot. No one now takes a nap, as they call it, without drawing his feet out of the stirrups, and leaning upon his lance, as the knights errant used to do. No one now, issuing from the wood, penetrates yonder mountains, and then treads the barren, lonely shore of the sea, mostly a tempestuous and stormy one, and finding on the beach a little bark without oars, sail, mast, or tackling of any kind, in intrepidity of his heart flings himself into it and commits himself to the wrathful billows of the deep sea, that one moment lift him up to heaven and the next plunge him into the depths, and opposing his breast to the irresistible gale, finds himself, when he least expects it, 3,000 leagues and more away from the place where he embarked, and leaping ashore in a remote and unknown land has adventures that deserve to be written, not on parchment, but on brass. But now sloth triumphs over energy, indolence over exertion, vice over virtue, arrogance over courage, and theory over practice in arms, which flourished and shone only in the golden ages and in knight's errant. For tell me, who was more virtuous and more valiant than the famous Amadis of Gaul? Who more discreet than Palmerin of England? Who more gracious and easy than Tirante el Blanco? Who more courtly than Lisuarte of Greece? Who more slashed or slashing than Don Belianis? Who more intrepid than Perion of Gaul? Who more ready to face danger than Felix Marte of Acarnia? Who more sincere than Esplandian? Who more impetuous than Don Cirongilio of Thrace? Who more bold than Rodomonte? Who more prudent than King Sobrino? Who more daring than Reynaldos? Who more invincible than Roland? And who more gallant and courteous than Ruggiero? From whom the Dukes of Ferrara of the present day are descended, according to Turpin in his Cosmography. All these knights, and many more that I could name, Signor Curate, were knights errant, the light and glory of chivalry. These, of such as these, I would have to carry out my plan, and in that case my Majesty would find himself well served and would save great expense, and a Turk would be left tearing his beard. And so I will stay where I am, as the chaplain does not take me away, and if Jupiter, as the barber has told us, will not send rain, here I am, and I will reign when I please. I say this that Master Basin may know that I understand him. Indeed, Signor Don Quixote, said the barber, I did not mean it in that way, and, so help me God, my intention was good, and your worship ought not to be vexed. As to whether I ought to be vexed or not, returned Don Quixote, I myself am the best judge. Hereupon the curate observed, I have hardly said a word as yet, and I would gladly be relieved of a doubt, arising from what Don Quixote has said, that worries and works my conscience. The Signor Curate has leave for more than that, returned Don Quixote, so he may declare his doubt, for it is not pleasant to have a doubt on one's conscience. Well then, with that permission, said the curate, I say my doubt is that all I can do, I cannot persuade myself that the whole pack of knights errant you, Signor Don Quixote, have mentioned, were really and truly persons of flesh and blood, that ever lived in the world. On the contrary, I suspect it to be all fiction, fable, and falsehood, and dreams told by men awakened from sleep, or rather still half asleep. That is another mistake, replied Don Quixote, into which many have fallen who do not believe that there ever were such knights in the world, and I have often, with divers people and on divers occasions, tried to expose this almost universal error to the light of truth. Sometimes I have not been successful in my purpose, sometimes I have, supporting it upon the shoulders of the truth, which truth is so clear that I can almost say I have with my own eyes seen Amadis of Gaul, who was a man of lofty stature, fair complexion, with a handsome though black beard, of a countenance between gentle and stern in expression, sparing of words, slow to anger, and quick to put it away from him. And as I have depicted Amadis, so I could, I think, portray and describe all the knights errant that are in all the histories in the world, For by the perception I have that they were what their histories describe, and by the deeds they did and the dispositions they displayed, it is possible, with the aid of sound philosophy, to deduce their features, complexion, and stature. How big, in your worship's opinion, may the giant Morgante have been, Señor Don Quixote? Asked the barber. With regard to giants, replied Don Quixote, opinions differ as to whether there ever were any or not in the world, but the Holy Scripture, which cannot err by a jot from the truth, shows us that there were, when it gives us the history of that big Philistine, Goliath, who was 7 cubits and a half in height, which is a huge size. Likewise, in the island of Sicily, there have been found leg bones and arm bones so large that their size makes it plain that their owners were giants, and as tall as great towers. Geometry puts this fact beyond a doubt, but for all that, I cannot speak with certainty as to the size of Morgante, though I suspect it cannot have been very tall, and I am inclined to be of this opinion because I find in history in which his deeds are particularly mentioned, that he frequently slept under a roof, and as he found houses to contain him, it is clear that his bulk could not have been anything excessive. That is true, said the curate, and yielding to the enjoyment of hearing such nonsense, he asked him what was his notion of the features of Rinaldo's of Montalban, and Don Rinaldo and the last of the 12 peers of France, for they were all knights-errant. As for Rinaldo's, replied Don Quixote, I venture to say that he was broad-faced, of ruddy complexion, with roguish and somewhat prominent eyes, excessively punctilious and touchy, and given to the society of thieves and scapegraces. With regard to Rinaldo and Rotolando and Orlando, I am of opinion and hold that he was of middle height, broad-shouldered, rather bow-legged, swarthy complexioned, red-bearded, with a hairy body and a severe expression of countenance, a man of few words, but very polite and well-bred. If Roland was not a more graceful person than your worship has described, said the curate, it is no wonder that the fair lady Angelica rejected him and left him for the gaiety, liveliness, and grace of that budding bearded little Moor to whom she surrendered herself, and she showed her sense in falling in love with the gentle softness of Medoro rather than the roughness of Roland. That Angelica, Señor Curate, returned Don Quixote, was a giddy damsel, flighty and somewhat wanton, and she left the world as full of her faggeries as of the fame of her beauty. She treated with scorn 1,000 gentlemen, men of valour and wisdom, and took up with a smooth-faced sprig of page, without fortune or fame, except such reputation for gratitude as the affection he bore his friend got for him. The great poet who sang her beauty, the famous Ariosto, not caring to sing her adventures after her contemptible surrender, dropped her where he says, how she received the scepter of Cathay, some bard of defter quill may sing some day. And this was no doubt a kind of prophecy, for poets are also called fates, that is to say diviners, and its truth was made plain, for since then a famous Andalusian poet has lamented and sung her tears, and another famous and rare poet, a Castilian, has sung her beauty. Tell me, Señor Don Quixote, said the barber here, among all those who praised her, has there been no poet to write a satire on this Lady Angelica? I can well believe, replied Don Quixote, that if Sacripante or Roland had been poets, they would have given the damsel a trimming, for it is naturally the way with poets who have been scorned or rejected by the ladies, whether fictitious or not, in short, by those whom they select as the ladies of their thoughts, to avenge themselves in satires and libels. A vengeance, to be sure, unworthy of generous hearts. But up to the present, I have not heard of any defamatory verse against the Lady Angelica, who turned the world upside down. Strange, said the curate, but at this moment they heard the housekeeper and the niece, who had previously withdrawn from the conversation, exclaiming aloud in the courtyard, and at the noise they all ran out.
咁呢一節就用咗一啲功夫去交代咗啲劇情，就係Don Quixote喺佢嘅鄉下療養嘅時候，祭司呢同埋呢個理髮師呢都冇去揾佢，過咗成個月，就係唔想勾起佢嘅一啲回憶啦。到一個月之後啦，就嚟探訪佢，睇下佢有冇好返。咁佢哋原本嘅交谈内容呢都盡量唔提有关游客嘅嘢，但係由于Don Quixote嘅表现实在太好啦，佢讲咪有关政事啊，有关日常嘅嘢全部都对答如流， 咁啊，令到咧呢个牧师咧就决定去同佢讲有关游客嘅内容。咁而当基多提咧依然都系坚持佢嘅谂法，而佢嘅讲法咧今次咧就更加客观、更加正经嘅。佢就系话佢只不过系想将游客精神带翻嚟呢个国家、呢个土地，系因为佢觉得呢个精神咧系会为国家嘅国民带嚟好处，包括我哋嘅国王。对于我哋嘅军事，对于我哋守护我哋嘅国土，就唔需要惧怕呢啲土耳其嘅入侵者。呢、这个骑士精神咧，系对国民咧系有一个增强啦，一个带嚟荣耀啦，带嚟勇敢啦、果断啦、博足嘅好处。佢只系想为国家带嚟、为国民带嚟啲精神啫。佢系冇其他含义喺度嘅，系冇其他浅劣嘅含义喺度。咁去到最后啦，当基多提都会表现出借佢哋喺对话当中将佢同其他精神病者挂钩，佢觉得有啲不似啦，有啲不满。咁成个对话其实表现出当基多提呢的确系神志清醒喎，佢系冇问题㗎喎，佢只不过系有啲游客意识嘅狂热啫咁样。好，我哋睇下呢一段有啲咩字同大家分享。pertinent, P-E-R-T-I-N-E-N-T, 形容词嚟嘅 ,relevant or applicable to a particular matter, opposite, 呢个恰当嘅意思，有关联嘅恰当嘅。之前有同大家分享过 impertinent 呢，嗰个就系无礼嘅，唔恰当嘅。pertinent 呢就系正面嘅。despondency, D-E-S-P-O-N-D-E-N-C-Y,名词嚟嘅 ，low spirits from loss of hope or courage，dejection， 沮丧、消沉、沮丧。odious，O-D-I-O-U-S， 形容词嚟嘅，意思就系好可恶、好可憎 ，extremely unpleasant，repulsive。好，呢一节同大家分享嚟呢度，下一次再同大家读你听，拜拜。大家好，读你听 2.0， 今日继续读 Miguel de Cervantes 嘅 Don Quixote， 读到 Part 2嘅 Chapter 2。呢一次嘅名叫做 Which treats of notable altercation which Sancho Panza had with Don Quixote's niece and housekeeper together with other droll matters。呢度 droll matters 意思即系啲滑稽嘅事情啦，我哋可以当系啲轻松嘅事件啊，唔系太严重嘅事吓，唔系太严重嘅事。咁啊，毕竟都系故事开手。咁上一回就讲咧呢个牧师啦，同埋呢个发型师、理发师就去探访唐吉奥提，疗养中嘅唐吉奥提，时间已经经过一个月噶啦。咁咧就佢哋由探病啦，到交谈啦，讲啲不着边际嘢啦，到最尾都系要针对翻唐吉奥提对于游侠呢个精神世界嘅一啲思想。咁佢就展开咗一啲辩论，係有建设性嘅，我可以咁讲，唔係无谓，唔係无聊嘅，係令到读者呢都可以带俾思考。咁到最后呢，当呢个辩论去到一个高位嘅时候呢，可以咁讲啦，当基多提嘅抗辩呢係都几有力嘅嘅时候呢，就听到屋出面呢就传来咗一啲声音喎、似乎呢有啲係咪有啲事件发生呢，有啲争执咁呢，睇下众人咧点样去处理呢件事啊！
The history relates that the outcry Don Quixote, the curate, and the barber heard came from the niece and the housekeeper exclaiming to Sancho, who was striving to force his way in to see Don Quixote while they held the door against him. What does the vagabond want in this house? Be off to your own, brother.For it is you and no one else that delude my master and lead him astray and take him tramping about the country. To which Sancho replied, Devil's own housekeeper, it is I who am deluded and led astray and taken tramping about the country and not thy master. He has carried me all over the world and you are mightily mistaken. He enticed me away from home by a trick, promising me an island, which I am still waiting for.May evil islands choke thee, thou detestable Sancho, said the niece. What are islands? Is it something to eat, glutton and gormandizer that thou art? It is not something to eat, replied Sancho, but something to govern and rule, and better than four cities or four judgeships at court. For all that, said the housekeeper, you don't enter here. You bag of mischief and sack of knavery. Go govern your house and dig your sea patch, and give over looking for islands or shylands. The curate and the barber listened with great amusement to the words of the three, but Don Quixote, uneasy lest Sancho should blab and blurt out a whole heap of mischievous stupidities, and touch upon points that might not be altogether to his credit, called to him and made the other two hold their tongues and let him come in. Sancho entered, and the curate and the barber took their leave of Don Quixote, of whose recovery they despaired when they saw how wedded he was to his crazy ideas, and how saturated with the nonsense of his unlucky chivalry, and said the curate to the barber, You will see, gossip, that when we are less thinking of it, our gentleman will be off once more for another flight. I have no doubt of it, returned the barber, but I do not wonder so much at the madness of the knight as at the simplicity of the squire, who has such a firm belief in all that about the island, that I suppose all the exposures that could be imagined would not get it out of his head. God help them, said the curate, and let us be on the lookout to see what comes of all these absurdities of the knight and squire, for it seems as if they had both been cast in the same mould, and the madness of the master without the simplicity of the man would not be worth a farthing. That is true, said the barber, and I should like very much to know what the pair are talking about at this moment. I promise you, said the curate, the knees of the housekeeper would tell us by and by, for they are not the ones to forget to listen. Meanwhile, Don Quixote shut himself up in his room with Sancho, and when they were alone, he said to him, It grieves me greatly, Sancho, that thou shouldst have said and sayest that I took thee out of thy cottage, when thou knowest I did not remain in my house. We sallied forth together, we took the road together, we wandered abroad together, and we have had the same fortune and the same luck. If they blanketed thee once, they belabored me 100 times, and that is the only advantage I have of thee. That was only reasonable, replied Sancho, for, by what your worship says, misfortunes belong more properly to knights errant than to their squires. Thou art mistaken, Sancho, said Don Quixote, according to the when the head aches, all the members ache, etc. I don't understand any language but my own, said Sancho. I mean to say, said Don Quixote, that when the head suffers, all the members suffer. And so, being thy lord and master, I am thy head, and thou art part of me as thou art my servant, and therefore any evil that affects or shall affect me should give thee pain, and what affects thee give pain to me. It should be so, said Sancho, but when I was blanketed as a member, my head was on the other side of the wall, looking on while I was flying through the air, and did not feel any pain whatever. And if the members are obliged to feel the suffering of the head, it should be obliged to feel their sufferings. Dost thou mean to say now, Sancho, said Don Quixote, that I did not feel when they were blanketing thee? If thou dost, thou must not say so or think so, for I felt more pain then in spirit than thou didst in body. But let us put that aside for the present, for we shall have opportunities enough for considering and settling the point. Tell me, Sancho, my friend, what do they say about me in the village here? What do the common people think of me? What do the hidalgos? What do the caballeros? What do they say of my valor, of my achievements, of my courtesy? How do they treat the task I have undertaken in reviving and restoring to the world the now forgotten order of chivalry? In short, Sancho, I should have thee tell me all that has come to thine ears on this subject, and thou art to tell me, without adding anything to the good or taking away anything from the bad, for it is the duty of loyal vassals to tell the truth to their lords, just as it is and in its proper shape, not allowing flattery to add to it or any idle deference to lessen it. And I would have thee know, Sancho, that if the naked truth, undisguised by flattery, came to the ears of princes, times would be different, and other ages would be reckoned iron ages more than ours, which I hold to be the golden of these latter days. Profit by this advice, Sancho, and report to me clearly and faithfully the truth of what thou knowest touching what I have demanded of thee. That I will do with all my heart, master, replied Sancho, provided your worship will not be vexed at what I say, as you wish me to say it out in all its nakedness, without putting any more clothes on it than it came to my knowledge in. I will not be vexed at all, returned Don Quixote. Thou mayest speak freely, Sancho, and without any beating about the bush. Well then, said he, first of all, I have to tell you that the common people consider your worship a mighty great madman, and me no less a fool. The Hidalgo say that, Not keeping within the bounds of your quality of gentleman, you have assumed the don and made a knight of yourself at a jump, with 4 fine stocks and a couple of acres of land, and never a shirt to your back. The caballeros say they do not want to have hidalgos setting up in opposition to them, particularly squire hidalgos who polish their own shoes and darn their black stockings with green silk. That, said Don Quixote, does not apply to me, for I always go well-dressed and never patched. Ragged I may be, but ragged more from the wear and tear of arms than of time. As to your worship's valour, courtesy, accomplishments, and tasks, there is a variety of opinions. Some say, mad but droll, others, valiant but unlucky, others, courteous but meddling, and then they go into such a number of things that they don't leave a whole bone either in your worship or in myself. Recollect, Sancho, said Don Quixote, that wherever virtue exists in an eminent degree, it is persecuted. Few or none of the famous men that have lived escape being calumniated by malice. Julius Caesar, the boldest, wisest, the bravest of captains, was charged with being ambitious and not particularly cleanly in his dress or pure in his morals. Of Alexander, whose deeds won him the name of great, they say that he was somewhat of a drunkard. Of Hercules, him of the many labors, it is said that he was lewd and luxurious. Of Don Galaor, the brother of Amadis of Gaul, it was whispered that he was over quarrelsome, and of his brother that he was lachrymose. So that, O Sancho, amongst all these calumnies against good men, mine may be let pass, since they are no more than thou hast said. That's just where it is, body of my father. Is there more then? Asked Don Quixote. There's a tail to be skinned yet, said Sancho. All so far is cakes and fancy bread, but if your worship wants to know all about the calumnies they bring against you, I will fetch you one this instant who can tell you the whole of them without missing an atom. For last night the son of Bartolomeu Carrasco, who has been studying at Salamanca, came home after having been made a bachelor, and when I went to welcome him, he told me that your worship's history is already abroad in books, with the title of The Ingenious Gentleman Don Quixote of La Mancha. And they says they mention me in it by my own name of Sancho Panza, and the lady Dulcinea del Toboso too, and divers things that happened to us when we were alone, so that I crossed myself in my wonder how the historian who wrote them down could have known them. I promise thee, Sancho, said Don Quixote, the author of our history will be some sage enchanter, or to such nothing that they choose to write about is hidden. What? Said Sancho. A sage and an enchanter? Why, the bachelor Samson Carrasco says the author of the history is called Cid Hamante Barragena. That is a Moorish name, said Don Quixote. Maybe so, replied Sancho, for I have heard say that the Moors are mostly great lovers of Barragenas. Thou must have mistaken the surname of this Cid, which means in Arabic lord, Sancho, observed Don Quixote. Very likely, replied Sancho, but if your worship wishes me to fetch the bachelor, I will go for him in a twinkling. That will do me a great pleasure, my friend, said Don Quixote, for what thou hast told me has amazed me, and I shall not eat a morsel that will agree with me until I have heard all about it. Then I'm off for him, said Sancho, and leaving his master, he went in quest of the bachelor, with whom he returned in a short time, and all three together they had a very droll colloquy.
Okay, 解釋咗先前咧，當佢哋聽到門外嘅噪音咧，原來就係 Sancho Panza 佢想入嚟探訪佢。不過咧，佢自己嘅 housekeeper 咧同埋佢侄女咧就阻止佢入嚟，因為佢哋就怪係 Sancho 去迷惑當佢哋，令到佢咧走去遊俠。咁 Sancho 啊，當然就即時咧反對啦，就係話調翻轉，好似我俾人迷惑，仲俾人呃咗話會俾個賭我。然之后对方又会话咩系个赌啊咁样，咁啊呢啲比较滑稽啦，可以话啲搞笑啲嘅对话啦。咁入到嚟之后咧，牧师同理发师咧都先离场啦，就俾 Sancho 同 Don Quixote 两个就独自去做一个对话啦，啲深入啲嘅对话啦。Don Quixote 咧就率先发话啦，就系话：哎呀，我好唔开心啊！头先听到你喺门外面咁讲话，系我迷惑你。但系你冇发觉咩？每一次出事嘅时候，我都比你伤好多噶。咁 Sancho 就话：咁系应该噶，因为你话骑士精神，嗰、那个骑士要受嘅苦难系要比佢嘅侍从多好多噶嘛。咁样有啲争辩啊。 Don Quixote 就话：其实我好想知道村入面嘅系点样淋佢嘅，吓嗰啲乡绅啊，嗰啲比较有地位嘅人啊，点样去睇佢呢个游侠精神啊？点样去睇佢自己 ？Sancho 就脆脆到来啦，就系、是、又好坏参半啊。咁但系其实咧，仲有好多唔好嘅嘢嘅，呢刻都未完全讲晒出嚟。佢话不过咧。Sancho 就话啦，吓最近咧就有一个人，佢咧就喺村出面翻嚟嘅，咁佢咧就啱啱咧做咗个学者，咁佢咧就同我哋讲，我原来你喺出边好有名噶，咁咧仲有一个尊称咁啦，连佢自己啊 Sancho 嘅自己连带都出咗名，外面人都知道佢嘅姓名，当然仲有就系 Don Quixote 所谓嘅情人啦，啊都先呢个 The Boss 啦，咁于是乎 Don Quixote 就好开心啦啊。不如你快邀请佢入嚟啊！我想知道点解出边嘅人会咁清楚我哋嘅事迹，究竟系边个喺度宣传、宣扬紧佢哋嘅事咧？咁样 ，Sancho 就话冇问题，我一即刻带佢入嚟，跟住转头咧就带佢入嚟啦。然之后咧，三个人咧又会有继续一个好滑稽嘅对话啦。好，呢一节同大家分享几个字 ，altercation，altercation 呢个喺个文中主题嗰度。啊！呢一节嘅主题就有噶啦 ，altercation（A-L-T-E-R-C-A-T-I-O-N） 名词嚟嘅 ，a noisy argument or disagreement，especially in public， 喺公众场所嘅争吵啦。eminent（E-M-I-N-E-N-T） 啊，形容词嚟嘅。如果形容一个人嘅话咧，就系 famous and respected within a particular sphere。都是有名啦，显赫啦。如果是 quality 咧，即系都系能力咧，都是类似嘅。present to a notable degree 都是一个好超然、好卓越嘅咁嘅意思。咁故事文中咧就 Don Quixote 就话：乜你冇发觉任何一个人当佢嘅成就系去到一个 eminent 嘅 degree 咧，佢就会受到迫害。例如 Julius Caesar， 例如 Alexander the Great 咁样，呢、这个就系 Don Quixote 嘅抗辩啦。Calumniate，calumniate，C-A-L-U-M-N-I-A-T-E， 动词嚟嘅 ，make false and defamatory statements about 吓、啊，诽谤、中伤、污蔑，好唔好嘅字？咁呢个亦都系 Don Quixote 话啦，就系即系我哋呢啲做大事嘅，就系、是、会俾人污蔑。Calumniate 噶啦，好，我哋下一次再同大家读你听，拜拜。